Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
They all fall down. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. I am your host, Big D, otherwise known as Dallas. And today, I'd like to remind you all that the guest call-in number is 718-508-9883. Today, I've got a special treat for you. Today, I am talking about the notorious Andre Chikatilo, otherwise known as the Butcher of Russia. Now, started, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed the holidays so far, because now we're going to be shifting away from all that is happy and joyful in the world to something much darker. So, let's dim the lights and step into a world much darker than what we've grown accustomed to. So who was Andre Chikatilo? And what did he do? Why is he an individual of merit? Well, Andre Chikatilo was a former personally been held responsible for the deaths of more than 50 people in the Soviet Union. He was born on October 16th, 1936, in the Ukraine state of the USSR, or Soviet Union. Chikatilo had an... Andre had a very difficult childhood. And the only sexual experience as an adolescent, ended quickly and led to much ridicule, leading to later sexually violent acts. When police would later catch him, he would confess to the gruesome murder of at least 56 people and would be found guilty in 1992 and summarily executed in 1994. But his journey from that time was an interesting one indeed. He was born Andrei Romanovich Chikatilo and was born in the village of Yabloshnoi, in the heart of rural Ukraine. During the 1930s, Ukraine was known as the breadbasket of the Soviet Union. Stalin's policy of agricultural collectivization and an imposed famine caused widespread hardship for the people of the area and decimated the country's population. At the time of Andrei's birth, the effects of the famine were still widely felt, and his early childhood was influenced by deprivation. The situation was made worse still when the USSR entered World War II against Germany, bringing sustained bombing raids on the Ukraine. In addition to the external hardships, Andrei is believed to have suffered from hydrocephalus, water on the brain, at birth, which caused him a genital urinary tract problems later on in his life, including bedwetting into his late adolescence and later the inability to sustain an erection for long periods of time, although he was able to finish himself. His home life was disrupted by his conscription into the war against Germany, where he was captured and held prisoner, and then vilified by his countrymen for allowing himself to be captured. When he finally returned home, Chikatilo suffered the consequences of his father's cowardice, making him the focus of school bullying. Painfully shy as a result of this, his only experience of young adolescent sexual exploration occurred at the age of 15, when he was reported to have overpowered a young girl and ejaculated immediately during the brief struggle, for which he received even more ridicule. This humiliation colored all future sexual experiences and cemented his association of sex with violence. He would fail his entrance exam to Moscow University, and a spell of national service was followed by a move to Rodionovo Nestorievsky, a town near Rostov, in 1960, where he became a telephone engineer. His younger sister moved in with him and became concerned by his lack of success with the opposite sex. She engineered a meeting with a local girl named Faina, whom he went on to marry in 1963. Despite his sexual problems and a lack of interest in conventional sex, they produced two children and lived an outwardly normal life as a family. In 1971, however, Andrei changed careers to become a school teacher. A string of complaints about indecent assaults on young children forced him to move from school to school before he finally settled at a mining school in Shakhny, near Rostov. Now, Andrei would later become known as the Rostov Ripper and the Butcher of Rostov. He was also known as the Four Strip Killer and the Red Ripper throughout his career. The majority of his murders were committed in the Rostov Oblast of the Russian SFSR. If you're not sure what the Rostov Oblast is, it is a federal subject of Russia, an oblast located in the Southern Federal District. It is a way in which the areas underneath the Soviet Union's banner at the time had been divided. It's a type of administrative division. They applied this to Belarus, Bulgaria, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Ukraine, parts of Russia, Croatia, the Kingdom of Serbs, and the Slovenes. Official terms in successor states of the Soviet Union differ, but some still use the cognate of the Russian term voblast or oblast. So, little aside there for you all. Nonetheless, Andrei committed most of his murders in this small, isolated area. Before we get to the grisly details of our subject of today, let's dig a little deeper into the early life of Andrei. Just a little bit deeper. Because there's a little bit more to his early life. I mentioned before that Andrei experienced hardship, that his father would later be forced off to go to the military, fight for the Union. Before this, Andrei's family, one-room hut, and they received no wages for their work, but instead received the right to cultivate a plot of land behind the family hut. The family seldom had sufficient food, and Andrei later claimed not to have eaten bread until the age of 12, adding that he and his family often had to eat grass and leaves in an effort to stave off hunger. Throughout his childhood, Andrei was repeatedly told by his mother, Anna, that prior to his birth, an older brother of his named Stefan, at the age of 4, had been kidnapped, murdered, and cannibalized by starving neighbors, although it has never been independently established as to whether this incident has actually occurred or if a Stefan Shiktilo Edver existed. Nonetheless, Andrei recalled his childhood as being blighted by poverty, ridicule, hunger, and war. To go with his chronic bedwetting, Andrei also suffered a great deal of scorn at the hands of his mother. His mother grew tired of his wastefulness, consistently dirtying the bedding, which they didn't possess a great deal of, forcing her to clean it more often than not. And this earned him constant beration and beating by his mother for each offense. In 1943, Andre's mother would give birth to a baby girl named Tatiana. Now, because Tilo's father had been conscripted in 1941 and he could not have fathered this child, as many Ukrainian women had been, had found themselves molested by German soldiers in World War II, it had been speculated by many that Tatiana was conceived as a result of a rape committed by a German soldier. As Andre and his mother lived in a one-room hut, though, this rape is suggested to have occurred in the presence of Andre himself. Now, it's not until 1944 that Andre begins his schooling, and although shy and ardently studious as a child, he was physically weak and regularly attended school in homespun clothing. By 1946, with his stomach swollen from hunger resulting from the post-war famine, which plagued much of the Soviet Union, on several occasions this hunger caused him to both faint at home, both at school and at home and school both. And he was consistently targeted by bullies who mocked him not only for his father's apparent cowardice in the war, but also over his physical stature and timid nature. At home, he and his sister were constantly berated by their mother. Tatiana later recalled that in spite of the hardships endured by her parents, their father Roman was a kind man, whereas their mother was harsh and unforgiving. Tilo developed a passion for reading and memorizing data and often studied at home, both to increase his sense of self-worth for his myopia, which often prevented him from reading the classroom blackboard. To his teachers, Andre was an excellent student upon whom they would regularly bestow praise and commendation. By his teens, Andre was both a model student and ardent communist. He was appointed editor of his newspaper at the age of 14 and chairman of the Pupils Communist Committee 2 years later. He was an avid reader of communist literature, and he was delegated the task of organizing street marches. Although Andre claimed learning did not come easy to him due to headaches and a poor memory, he was the only student from his collective farm to complete the final year of study, graduating with excellent grades in the year 1954. Pardon me. At the onset of puberty, he would discover that he suffered from chronic impotence. We mentioned earlier his inability to sustain himself in the presence of a woman, fueling much of his inadequacies. This worsened his social awkwardness and self-hatred. He would find himself to be shy in the company of women. His first crush at age 17 had been a young girl named Lilia Barasheva, with whom he'd been acquainted. He was chronically nervous in her company and never asked her for a date. The same year, he jumped upon an 11-year-old friend of his younger sister at the age of 15. This happened, wrestled to the ground. Following his graduation at the age of 17 was when he would find himself rejected by Moscow University. Although he passed the entrance exam, his grades were not deemed good enough for acceptance. He speculated his scholarship application was rejected due to his father's tainted war record, as his father had been branded a traitor for being taken prisoner in 1943. But the truth was that other students had performed better in a highly competitive exam than he did, and he did not attempt to enroll at another university and instead traveled to the city of Kursk, where he worked as a laborer for 3 months before, in 1955, enrolling in a vocational school where he studied to become a communications technician and eventually became a telephone engineer. The same year, he formed his first serious relationship with a local girl 2 years his junior, and on three separate occasions they attempted intercourse, though on each occasion he was unable to sustain himself. After 18 months, their relationship would break off. Completion of his 2-year vocational training, he chose to relocate to the Ural city of Nizhny Tagil to work upon a long-term construction project. While working in this city, he also undertook correspondence courses in engineering with the Moscow Electrotechnical Institute of Communication. He worked in the Urals for 2 years until he was drafted into the Soviet Army in 1957. He performed his compulsory military service between 1957 and 1960, assigned first to serve with border guards in Central Asia, then to a KGB communications unit in Berlin, where here his work record was unblemished, and he joined the Communist Party in 1960, shortly before his military service ended. Upon completing his army service, he returned to his native village to live with his parents and soon became acquainted with a young divorcee. The pair began a three-month relationship, which ended after several unsuccessful attempts for him to copulate with her. When the woman innocently asked her friends for advice as to how he might overcome his inability to maintain an erection, as a result, most of his peers discovered his impotence. In 1993, an interview regarding this incident later on, Andre stated that girls were going behind my back, whispering that I was impotent. I was so ashamed, I tried to hang myself. My mother and some young neighbors pulled me out of the noose. Well, I thought no one would want such a shamed man, so I had to run away from there, away from my homeland. After several months, Andre would find a job as a communications engineer in a town located north of Rostov-on-Don. He relocated to Russia in 1961, renting a small apartment close to his workplace. The same year, his younger sister, Tatiana, finished her schooling, and this is where we had left off originally. His parents would relocate there to the region as well shortly thereafter. Tatiana would live with her brother for 6 months before marrying a local youth and moving into her in-law's home, and noted that nothing untoward with regard to her brother's lifestyle existed while she was there, or occurred while she was there with him, except for his chronic shyness around women. And she resolved to help her brother find a wife and start a family, which he did. To the arranged marriage, the young woman in question, Andre found himself quite pleased with her. He claimed that he was immediately attracted, and his marriage was, or I should say, in 1963, he would marry her, Vaina, and his marriage was basically an arranged one, which occurred barely 2 weeks after they had met, and in which the decisive roles were played by his sister and her husband. Andre claimed that his marital sex life was minimal, and that after his wife understood he was unable to maintain an erection, they agreed she would conceive by him, ejaculating externally and pushing it inside of her with his fingers. In 1965, she would give birth to a daughter, and 4 years later, in 1969, a son named Yuri was also born. So, it was at this time that Andre's life, seemingly finally on track, was about to shift to a very dark, dark place. But before we get to that place, before we dive into the dark abyss that was Andre Chikatilo's life as the Butcher of Rostov, the Red Ripper, we're going to take a commercial break. It's at this time that I must remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor here, Totally Driven Entertainment. He is wacky, he's funny, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for much more uplifting material than that which I'm sharing with you today. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Andre's shift into school teaching and what eventually becomes a dark and bloody path towards infamy.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black barber. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT, Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. Before the break, we talked about the early life and the struggles of Andre Chikatilo to fit in to society. We learned that he endured a great deal of scorn at the hands of his mother. And we learned that he became very self-conscious about his personal issues with impotence. We learned that this led him to leave home and pursue a life away from his home country in Russia, near Rostov-on-Don, where he would later engage in an arranged marriage with a more understanding wife, and seemingly his life had begun to come together. In 1870, Andre completed a five-year correspondence course in Russian literature and obtained his degree in the subject from Rostov University. Shortly before obtaining his degree, he obtained a job managing regional sports activities. He maintained in this position for 1 year before beginning his career as a teacher of Russian language and literature in Novosibirsk. Now, he was largely ineffective as a teacher. Though knowledgeable in the subjects he taught, he was seldom able to maintain discipline in his classes and was regularly subjected to mockery by his students, who he claimed took advantage of his modest nature. Now, in May of 1973, Andre committed his first known sexual assault upon one of his own pupils. In this incident, he swam towards a 15-year-old girl and allegedly groped her breasts and genitals, ejaculating as the girl struggled against his grasp. Now, months later, Andre would also sexually assault another teenage girl whom he had locked in his classroom. He was not disciplined for either of these incidents or for the occasions in which fellow teachers observed him fondling himself in the presence of his own students. This guy was truly a deplorable individual at this point. Now, one of Andre's duties at the school was ensuring his students who boarded at the school were present in their dormitories in the evenings, or on several occasions, he is known to have entered the girls' dormitory in the hope of seeing them undressed. In response to the increasing number of complaints lodged against him by his students, the director of the school summoned Andre to a formal meeting and informed him he should resign voluntarily or he would be fired. Andre would leave his employment discreetly and find another job as a teacher at another school in the very same area. This occurred in 1974. He lost this job as a result of staff cutbacks in 1978, in September of 1978, before finding another teaching position in the town of Shakti. His career as a teacher ended in March of 1981 following several complaints of child molestation against pupils of both sexes. That same month, he began a job as a supply clerk for a factory based in Rostov, which produced construction materials. This role required Andre to travel extensively across much of the Soviet Union to either physically purchase the new raw materials required to fulfill production quotas or to negotiate supply contracts. It was in September of 1978 that Andre, of course, had moved to the town of Shakti, a coal mining town near Rostov-on-Don, where he committed his first documented murder. On December 22nd of this same year, Andre lured a 9-year-old girl named Yelena Zakatanova to an old house which he had secretly purchased. He attempted to rape her, but he failed to achieve an erection for this purpose. When the girl struggled, he choked her and stabbed her 3 times in the abdomen, ejaculating whilst stabbing her. In an interview after his arrest, he later recalled that after stabbing her, the girl had said something very hoarsely, whereupon he strangled her into unconsciousness before throwing her body into the nearby Grushev River. Her body would be found 2 days later. Numerous pieces of evidence linked him to the murder. Spots of blood had been found in the snow near the house that he had purchased. Neighbors had noted that he had been present in the house on the evening of December 22nd. The girl's school rucksack had been found upon the opposite bank of the river at the end of the street, indicating that she had been thrown into the river at this location. And a witness had given police a detailed description of a man closely resembling Andre, whom she had seen talking with young Zakhtanova at the bus stop, where the girl had last been seen alive. Despite these facts, a 25-year-old laborer named Alexander Kravchenko, who as a teenager had served a prison sentence for the rape and murder of a teenage girl, was arrested immediately for the crime. A search of Kravchenko's home revealed spots of blood on his wife's jumper. The blood type was determined to match both Zakhtanova and Kravchenko's wife. Kravchenko had a watertight alibi. For the afternoon of December 22nd, he had been at home with his wife and a friend of hers the entire afternoon, and the neighbors of the couple were able to verify this. Nonetheless, the police, having threatened his wife with being accomplice to murder and her friend with perjury, obtained new statements in which these women claimed that he had not returned home until late in the evening on the day of the murder. Confronted with these altered testimonies, Kravchenko confessed to the killing immediately. He was tried for the murder in 1979, and at his trial, he retracted his confession and maintained his innocence, stating his confession had been obtained under extreme duress. Despite the retraction, he was convicted to murder and sentenced to death in 1979. The sentence itself was commuted to 15 years imprisonment, the maximum possible length of imprisonment at that time by the Supreme Court in December of 1980. Under pressure from the victim's relatives, he was retired and eventually executed for her murder in July of 1983. Following the murder, Andre was able to achieve sexual arousal and orgasm only through stabbing and slashing women and children to death. He later claimed that the urge to relive this experience overwhelmed him. Or I should say to relive this experience that overwhelmed him. Although he did stress that initially he had struggled to resist these urges. On September 3rd of 1981, he encountered a 17-year-old boarding school student named Larissa Tkachenko standing at a bus stop as he exited a public library in Rostov City. According to his confession, Andre lured her to a forest near the Don River with the pretext of drinking vodka and relaxing. When they reached a secluded area, he threw her to the ground before tearing off her clothes and attempting intercourse. As she remonstrated against his actions, when he failed to achieve an erection for this attempted sexual assault, he forced mud inside her mouth to stifle her screams before battering and strangling the poor girl to death. As he had no knife, he mutilated the body with his teeth and also a sharpened stick. He also tore one nipple from the young girl's body with his teeth before loosely covering her body with leaves and branches and torn pages of newspaper. Her body would be found the following day. 9 months after her murder, on the 12th of June in 1982, Andre traveled by bus to Bagovsky district of Rostov to purchase vegetables. Having to change buses in the village of Donskoy, he decided to continue his journey on foot. Walking away from the bus station, he encountered a 13-year-old girl named Lyubov Boruk, who was herself walking home from a shopping trip. Once on the path both were taking together was shielded from the view. Once the path the two were taking together was shielded from view of the potential witnesses by bushes, Andre pounced upon her, dragging her to some nearby undergrowth, tore off her dress, and killed her by stabbing and slashing her to death. When her body was found on the 27th of June, 15 days later, the medical examiner discovered evidence of 22 knife wounds inflicted to the neck, head, and chest, as well as the pelvic region. Further wounds were found on the skull, suggesting the killer had attacked her from behind with the handle and blade of his knife. In addition, several striations were discovered upon her eye sockets. Following by Buryuk's murder, Andre, it should be said, was no longer able to resist his homicidal urges. Between July and September of 1982, he killed another 5 people between the ages of 9 and 18 and established a pattern of approaching children, runaways, and young vagrants at bus or railroad stations, enticing them to a nearby forest or other secluded area and murdering them, predominantly by stabbing, slashing, and eviscerating the victim with a knife, although some victims, in addition to receiving a multitude of knife wounds, were either strangled or battered viciously to death. Many of the victims' bodies bore evidence of mutilation to the eye sockets. Pathologists concluded that the injuries were caused by a knife, leading investigators to the conclusion that the killer had gouged out the eyes of his victims, oftentimes whilst they were still alive. Andre's adult female victims were often prostitutes or homeless women whom he would lure to a secluded area with promises of alcohol or money. He would typically attempt intercourse with these victims, but he would usually be unable to achieve or maintain an erection to do so. This would send him into a further murderous fury, particularly if the woman mocked his impotence. He would achieve orgasm only when he stabbed and slashed the victim to death. His child and adolescent victims, however, were of both sexes. Andre would lure these victims to secluded areas using a variety of ruses, usually formed in the initial conversation with the victim, such as promising them assistance or company, offering to show them a shortcut, a chance to view rare stamps, films, coins, or with an offer of food or candy. He would typically overpower these victims once they were alone, often tying their hands behind their backs with a length of rope before stuffing mud or loam into the victim's mouth to silence their screams. And then he would proceed to kill them. After killing them, Andre would make rudimentary, although seldom serious, efforts to conceal their bodies before leaving the scene of the crime. On the 11th of December in 1982, Andre encountered a 10-year-old girl named Olga Stalmanichuk riding a bus to her parents' home in Novoshetinsk, and persuaded the child to leave the bus with him. This would be the last time that this young girl would be seen alive. She was seen by a fellow passenger who reported the girl as being led firmly by the hand by a middle-aged man. Stalmanichuk was lured to a cornfield on the outskirts of Novoshetinsk before she was killed. She would be stabbed in excess of 50 times around the head and body. Her chest would be ripped open and her lower bowel and bowels and uterus would be excised from her body. January of 1983, four victims thus far killed had been tentatively linked to the same killer. A Moscow police team headed by Major Mikhail Pestol was sent to Rostov-on-Don to direct the investigation. He established a team of 10 investigators based in Rostov, charged with solving all four cases. In March, Fedosov assigned a newly appointed specialist forensic analysis, or I should say analyst, Viktor Burakov, to head the investigation. The following month, Olga's body was found. Burakov was summoned to the crime scene where he examined the numerous knife wounds and eviscerations conducted upon the child and the striations upon her eye sockets. He later stated that as he noted the striations upon her eye sockets, any doubt about the presence of a serial killer completely evaporated. Andre didn't kill again till June of 1983 when he murdered a 15-year-old Armenian girl named Laura Sarkisian, whose body was found close to an unmarked railway platform near Shakhty. By September, he'd killed another five people. Accumulation of bodies found and the similarities between the pattern of wounds inflicted on victims forced the Soviet authorities to acknowledge that a serial killer was, in fact, on the loose. On the 6th of September in 1983, the public prosecutor of the USSR formally linked six of the murders thus far committed to the same killer. Due to the sheer savagery of the murders and the precision of the eviscerations upon the victims' bodies, police theorized that the killings had been conducted by either a group harvesting organs to sell for transplant, the work of a satanic cult, or a mentally ill individual. Now, much of the police effort concentrated upon the theory that the killer must be either mentally ill, homosexual, or a pedophile, and the alibis of all individuals who had either spent time in psychiatric wards or had been convicted of homosexuality or pedophilia were checked and logged in a card filing system. Registered sex offenders were also investigated, and if their alibi was corroborated, they were eliminated from the inquiry. Beginning of September of 1983, several young men confessed to the murders, although these individuals were often intellectually disabled youths who admitted to the crimes only under prolonged and often brutal interrogation. Three known homosexuals and a convicted sex offender committed suicide as a consequence of the investigators' heavy-handed tactics. As a result of the investigation of the killings, more than 1,000 unrelated crimes, including 95 murders and 245 rapes, were solved. So, indeed, it should be said that some gains were made by the police in this instance. Despite the horrendous nature of Andre's crimes, 1,000 unrelated crimes, including 95 murders and 245 rape cases, were solved due to the investigative team's inquiries into capturing him. As police obtained confessions from subjects, bodies continued to be discovered, proving that the suspects who had confessed could not be the killer the police were seeking. On the 30th of October in 1983, the eviscerated body of a 19-year-old prostitute named Vera Shevkun was found in Shakti. She'd been killed on October 27th, although the mutilations inflicted upon her body were otherwise characteristic of those found upon other victims linked to the unknown murderer. The victims' eyes had not been enucleated or otherwise wounded, however. 2 months later, on the 27th of December, a 14-year-old Gukovo schoolboy named Sergei Markov was lured off a train and murdered at a rural station near Novosibirsk. Markov was emasculated and suffered over 70 knife wounds to his neck and upper torso before being completely and utterly eviscerated by the murderer. In January and February of 1984, Andre killed two women in Rostov's Aviator Park. On March 24th, he lured a 10-year-old boy named Dmitry Petiskinnikov away from a stamp kiosk. While walking with the boy, Andre was seen by several witnesses who were able to give investigators a detailed description of the killer. When Petishnikov's body was found 3 days later, police also found a footprint of the killer and both semen and saliva samples on the victim's clothing. On the 25th of May, Andre killed a young woman named Tatiana Petrosian and her 10-year-old daughter Svetlana in a wooded area outside Shakti. Petrosian had known Andre for several years prior to her murder. By the end of July, he'd killed three additional young women between the ages of 19 and 21 and a 13-year-old boy. In the summer of 1984, Andre was fired from his work as a supply clerk for theft of property. The accusation had been filed against him the previous February and had been asked to resign quietly, but he had refused to do so as he denied the charges. Andre found another job as a supply clerk in Rostov on August 1st. On the 2nd of August, Andre killed a 16-year-old girl named Natalia Galaskaya in Aviators Park. On the 7th of August, he lured another 17-year-old girl, Lyudmila Alexeyeva, to the banks of the Don River on the pretense of showing her a shortcut to a bus terminal. This poor girl suffered 39 slash wounds to her body before she was mutilated and disemboweled. Andre intentionally inflicted wounds that he knew would not be immediately fatal, so as to prolong her suffering. Her body was found in the following morning, her excised upper lip inside her mouth. Hours after the poor Lyudmila's cruel murder, Andre flew to Uzbekistan, capital of Tashkent, on a business trip. By the time he had returned to Rostov on the 15th of August, he had killed an unidentified young woman and a 10-year-old girl. Within 2 weeks, an 11-year-old boy named Alexander Shepel had been found on the banks of the Don River, strangled and castrated, with his eyes gouged out just yards from where young Lyudmila had earlier been found, before a young librarian, Irina Lushinskaya, was killed in Aviators Park on the 6th of September. On September 13th, 1984, Andre was observed by two undercover detectives attempting to talk to a young woman at the Rostov bus station. The detectives followed him as he wandered through the city, apparently without system, trying to make contacts with women and committing acts of lewdness in public places. Upon Andre's arrival, the city's central market, he was arrested and held for questioning. A search of his belongings revealed a knife and a rope. He was also discovered to be under investigation for minor theft at one of his former employers, which gave the investigators the legal right to hold him for a prolonged period of time. Andre's dubious background was uncovered, and his physical description matched the description of a man seen with Dmitry Petishkinnikov in March prior. Prior to the boy's murder, a sample of his blood was taken, and the results of which revealed his blood group 2B type A, whereas semen samples found upon a total of 6 victims murdered by the unknown killer throughout the spring and summer of 1984 had been classified by medical examiners to be AB. Andre's name was added to the card index filed used by the investigators. However, the results of his blood type analysis largely discounted him as being the unknown killer. He would be found guilty of theft of property from his previous employer and sentenced to 1 year in prison, but was freed on the 12th of December in 1984 after serving 3 months. On the 8th of October in 1984, the head of the Russian Public Prosecutor's Office formally linked 23 of Andrei's murders into one case and dropped all charges against the mentally handicapped youth who had previously confessed to the murders. Upon his release from prison in December of 1984, Andrei found a new work at a locomotive factory in Novosibirsk and kept a low profile. He didn't kill again until the 1st of August in 1985, when on a business trip to Moscow, he encountered an 18-year-old woman named Natalia Poklistova at a railway platform near Domodedovo Airport. Now, Poklistova was lured into a thicket of woods where she was bound and stabbed 38 times before being strangled to death. Based on the hypothesis that the killer had traveled from the Rostov Oblast to Moscow via air, investigators checked all Aeroflot flight records of passengers who commuted between Moscow and Rostov between July and early August. On this occasion, however, Andrei had traveled to Moscow by train, and accordingly, no documentation existed for investigators to research. 4 weeks later, on the 27th of August, Andrei killed another young woman named Irina Gulieva in Shakhty. As had been the case with Natalia Poklistova, the wounds had been inflicted upon the victim and linked her murder to the hunt for the serial killer. Andrei began to get more wary in November of 1985. A special prosecutor named Isa Kostoyev was appointed to supervise the investigation, which had been to this stage expanded to include 15 procurators and 29 detectives assigned to work exclusively upon the manhunt. The known murders linked to the manhunt were carefully investigated, and police began another round of questioning of known sex offenders and homosexuals who had still been seen as the prime suspects. The following month, the militia resumed the patrolling of railroad stations around Rostov, and plain-clothed female officers were ordered to loiter around bus and train stations. At the request of Viktor Burakov, police also took the step of consulting a psychiatrist named Dr. Alexander Buk. Kovanovsky, the first such consultation in a serial killer investigation in the USSR to this date. All crime scene and medical examiner's reports were also made available to Bakanovsky upon the understanding he would produce a psychological profile of the unknown murderer for investigators. The 65-page psychological profile described the killer as a reclusive man between the age of 45 and 50 who had endured a painful and isolated childhood and was incapable of flirting or courtship with women. The individual was of average intelligence, likely to be married and to have fathered children, but also a sadist who suffered from impotence and could achieve sexual arousal only by seeing his victims suffer. The murders themselves were an analog to the sexual intercourse this individual was incapable of performing, and his knife became a substitute for penis, which failed to function normally. Because many of the killings had occurred on weekdays near mass transport hubs and across the entire Rostov Oblast, Bakanovsky argued that the killer's work required him to travel regularly, and based upon the actual days of the week and when the killings had occurred, the killer was most likely tied to a production schedule. Andrei followed the investigation carefully, reading newspaper reports about the manhunt and keeping his homicidal urges under control throughout this. For almost a year following the 1985 murder in August of Irina Gulieva, no further victims were found in either Rostov or Moscow blasts, whose bodies bore the signature of Mutilations of the Unknown Murderer. Investigators did tentatively link the murder of a 33-year-old woman named Lyubov Golovkina, found stabbed to death in the Mayanikovsky district of Rostov on the 23rd of July in 1986, to the investigation, although this was solely based upon the basis that the killer's semen type matched that of the killer whom they were seeking, and the victim had been stripped naked prior to her murder. She had been stabbed in excess. She had been stabbed in excess of 20 times. The victim had not been dismembered or otherwise mutilated, nor had she been seen near a mass transportation area. Because of these discrepancies, many investigators expressed serious doubts as to whether this murder had been committed by the killer they were seeking. Another victim was found on the 18th of August of 1986, buried in a depression of earth in the grounds of a collective farm in the city of Batusk. The wounds inflicted upon this victim did seem to bear the trademark mutilations of victims linked to the manhunt killed between 1982 and 1985. The victim was an 18-year-old secretary named Irina Pogorielova. Pogorielova bore all the trademarked mutilations of the previous victims. Her body had been slit open from the neck to genitals, with one breast removed, and her eyes were cut out. As the murderer had made efforts to bury the body, some investigators theorized that this explained the sudden dearth in the number of victims found. By autumn of 1986, investigators in Rostov theorized that the unknown killer may have moved to another part of the Soviet Union and continued killing there. As the three victims killed in Rostov in 1985 and 86 had died in August, some investigators gave credence to the possibility that the perpetrator may have relocated to another part of the Soviet Union. To another part of the Soviet Union and may only be returning to Rostov in the summer. The police compiled bulletins to be sent to all forces throughout the USSR describing the pattern of the wounds their unknown killer inflicted upon his victims, requesting feedback. In the year 1987, Andrei killed an additional three times. On each occasion, the murder took place whilst he was on a business trip far away from the Rostov Oblast, and none of these murders were linked to the manhunt in Rostov. His first murder in 87 was committed on the 16th of May when he encountered a 12-year-old boy named Oleg Makarennikov at a train station in the Urals town of Revda. Poor Oleg was lured from the station with the promise of sharing a meal with Andrei at his dacha. He was murdered in woodland close to the station, although his remains would remain undiscovered until 1991. In July, he killed a 12-year-old boy named Ivan Bilovetsky, and this took place in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia. 18th of September, he killed a 16-year-old vocational school student named Yuri Tereshchuk in the wooded outskirts of Leningrad. In 1988, Andrei would kill another three times, murdering an unidentified woman in Krasny Sulin in April and two boys in May and July. Following the emasculation and murder of a young boy named Yevgeny Muratov near Shakhty, Andrei didn't kill again until the 1st of March in 1989 when he killed a 16-year-old girl in his daughter's vacant apartment. He dismembered her body and hid her remains in a sewer. As the victim had been dismembered, police did not link her murder to the investigation. Between May and August, Andrei killed another four people, three of whom were killed in Rostov and Shakhty, although only three of these victims were linked to the killer. While the resurfacing of victims definitively linked to the manhunt and the fact that the majority of these victims had been discovered close to railway stations, investigators assigned numerous plain-clothed officers to discreetly film and photograph passengers on trains throughout Rostov Oblast. Several trains were also fitted with cameras with the intention of filming or photographing a victim in the company of his or her murderer. On January 14th of 1990, Andrei encountered an 11-year-old by the name of Andrei Kravchenko standing outside a Shakhty theater. Parfshenko was lured from the theater on the pretext of being shown imported Western films Andre claimed to have at his residence. And his extensively stabbed and emasculated body was found in the secluded section of the woodland the following month. Several weeks after Kravchenko's murder, on the 7th of March, Andre lured a 10-year-old boy named Yaroslav Makarov from a Rostov train station to Rostov's botanical gardens and eviscerated him. On the 11th of March, the leaders of the investigation, headed by Mikhail Fedosov, held a meeting to discuss the progress made in the hunt. Fedosov was under intense pressure from the public, the press, and the Ministry of the Interior in Moscow to solve this case. The intensity of the manhunt in the years from 1984 up from the years to 1984 had receded to a degree between 85 and 87 when Andre had committed only 3 murders. Investigators had conclusively linked to the killer at all killed by 86. However, by March 1990, a further 6 victims had been linked to the killer. In addition, following the introduction of greater media freedom as a result of Glasnost, the Soviet news media was much less repressed than it had been in the early years of the manhunt, and as such, devoted extensive publicity to the case. Andre had killed 3 further victims by August of 1990, among them a 31-year-old woman named Lyubov Zolyeva, whose body would not be discovered until the 24th of August. On July 28th, he lured a young boy named Viktor Petrov away from a Rostov railroad station and killed him in the botanical gardens, and killed an 11-year-old boy named Ivan Fomin in the reeds near Novocherkassk Beach. The discovery of more victims sparked a massive police operation. Because several victims had been found at stations on one rail route through Rostov Oblast, Viktor Burakov suggested a plan to saturate all larger stations in the area with an obvious uniformed police presence, which the killer had not failed to notice. The intention was to discourage the killer from attempting to strike at any of these locations, and to have undercover agents patrol smaller and less busy stations where the murderer's activities were most likely to go unnoticed. The plan was approved, and both the uniformed and undercover officers were instructed to question any adult man in the company of a young woman or child and note his name and passport number. The police deployed 360 men at all the stations in Rostov Oblast, but only undercover officers were posted at 3 smallest stations on the route. On the 30th of October, police found the body of a 16-year-old boy named Vadim Gromov at the Donoleskovsk station. The wounds upon his body immediately linked him to the manhunt. The youth had been strangled and stabbed numerous times, as well as castrated, with the tip of his tongue severed and his left eye stabbed out. He'd been killed on the 17th of October, 10 days before the start of the initiative. The same day that his body was discovered, Andre lured another 16-year-old boy by the name of Viktor Tishenko off a train at Kirpichnya station, another station under surveillance from undercover police, and killed him in a nearby forest. His body, bearing 40 separate knife wounds, was found on the 3rd of November. But finally, on the 6th of November in 1990, Andre killed and mutilated a 22-year-old woman named Svetlana Korostik in woodland near Donoleskovsk station. While leaving the crime scene, he was observed by an undercover officer. The policeman observed Andre approach a well and wash his hands and face. When he approached the station, the undercover officer noted that Andre's coat had grass and soil stains on the elbows. Also, Andre had a small red smear on his cheek. To the officer, he looked suspicious. The only reason people entered the woodland near the station at that time of the year was to gather wild mushrooms, which was a popular pastime at this time. But Andre was not dressed like a typical forest scavenger. He was wearing more formal attire. Moreover, he had a nylon sports bag, which was unsuitable for carrying mushrooms. The policeman stopped Andre and checked his papers, but he had no formal reason to arrest him. When the police returned to his office, he filed a routine report containing the name of the person he had stopped at the station. On the 13th of November, The body of Cora Styx was found. She was the 36th known victim linked to the manhunt. Police summoned the officer in charge of surveillance and examined the reports. Not only was Andre's name amongst those reports, but it was familiar to several officers involved in the case because he had been questioned in 84 and been placed upon a 1987 suspect list compiled and distributed throughout the USSR. After checking with Andre's present and previous employers, investigators were able to place him in various towns and cities at times when several victims linked to the investigation had been killed. Questioning of former colleagues from Andre's teaching days revealed that he had been forced to resign from two positions due to repeated complaints of lewd behavior and sexual assault made by his pupils. Police placed Andre under surveillance and on the 14th of November in this same year. In several instances, particularly on the trains or buses, he was observed approaching lone young women or children and engaging them in conversation. If the woman or child broke off the conversation, Andre would wait a few minutes and seek out another conversation partner. On the 20th of November, after 6 days of surveillance, Andre left his house with a large jar, which he had filled with beer at a small kiosk in a local park. Before he wandered around, attempting to make contact with children he met on the way, upon exiting a cafe, he was arrested by four plainclothes police officers. Upon his arrest, Andre gave a statement claiming the police were mistaken and complained that he had been arrested in 1984 for the same series of murders. A strip search of the victim of the suspect, I should say, revealed a piece of evidence. One of his fingers had a flesh wound. Medical examiners concluded the wound was from a human bite. Andre's penultimate victim, Victor Tishenko, was a particularly strong youth. At the crime scene, the police had found numerous signs of a ferocious physical struggle between the victim and his murderer. Although a finger bone was later found to be broken and a fingernail had been bitten off, Andre had never sought medical treatment for his injuries. A search of his belongings revealed he'd been in possession of a folding knife and two links of rope. A sample of his blood was taken and he was placed in a cell inside the KGB headquarters in Rostov. The interrogation was performed by Isa Kostoyev, and the strategy chosen by the police to elicit confession was to lead Andre to believe that he was a very sick man in need of medical help. The intention was to give Andre hope that if he confessed, he would not be prosecuted by reason of insanity. Police knew their case against him was largely circumstantial, and under Soviet law, they had 10 days in which they could legally hold a suspect before either charging or releasing him. On November 21st, the results of his blood test again revealed his blood type to be A and not AB. Due to the amount of physical and circumstantial evidence investigators thus far compiled, which indicated he was indeed the murderer that they had been pursuing. Plus the fact the investigators had deduced the blood type of the murderer that they'd pursued using semen samples obtained from the clothing and bodies of 14 of the victims as opposed to actual blood samples, investigators obtained a sample of his semen to test his blood type, the results of which confirmed that his semen was type AB, where his blood and saliva were type A. Throughout the questioning, Andre repeatedly denied that he'd committed the murders, although he did confess to molesting his pupils during his career as a teacher. He also produced several written essays for them, which, though evasive regarding the actual murders, did reveal psychological symptoms consistent with those predicted by Dr. Pukanowski in 1985. The interrogation tactics used by the interrogators may have also caused Andre to become defensive. The informer sharing a KGB cell with the suspect reported to police that Andre had informed him that Koryestev had repeatedly asked him direct questions regarding the mutilations inflicted upon the victims. But on the 29th of November, at the request of Burakov and Fedosov, Dr. Alexander Bukhanovsky, the psychiatrist who'd written a 1985 profile of the then-unknown killer, was invited to assist in the questioning of the suspect. He read extracts from his 65-page profile of Andre, and within 2 hours, Andre burst into tears and had confessed to Bukhanovsky that he was indeed guilty of the crimes for which he had been arrested. After conversing well into the evening, Bukhanovsky reported to Burakov and Fedosov that Andre was ready to confess. Armed with handwritten notes that Bukhanovsky had prepared, Isa Kostyev prepared a formal accusation of murder dated on the 29th of November, eve of the expiration of the 10-day time period during which Andre could legally be held before being charged. The following morning, on the 30th of November, Kosteyev resumed the interrogation. According to the official protocol, Andre confessed to 34 of the 36 murders police had linked to him to. Although he denied two additional murders committed in 86, the police had initially believed he had committed, one of whom was Lyubov Golovka, found stabbed to death on the 23rd of July in the year 1986, and then a second of Irina Pogoryelova, found murdered in Patusk on the 18th of August in 86, and whose mutilations closely matched those of others linked to the manhunt. Andre would later specifically state in an outburst at his trial he had indeed killed Pogoryelova, whom he referred to by name in his outburst. Andre gave a full detailed description of each murder on the list of charges, all of which were consistent with the known facts regarding each killing. When prompted, he could draw a rough sketch of various crime scenes, indicating the position of the victim's body and various landmarks in the vicinity of the scene of the crime. Additional details provided further proof of his guilt. One victim on the list of charges was a 19-year-old student named Anna Lemesheva, whom Andre had killed on the 19th of July in 84 near Shakti Station. He recalled that as he fought to overpower her, she had stated that a man named Bars would retaliate for his attacking her. Her fiancé had the nickname Bars tattooed on his hand. In describing his victims, Andre falsely referred to them as de classe elements, whom he would lure to secluded areas before killing them. In many instances, particularly, though not exclusively, with his male victims, Andre stated that he would bind the victims' hands behind their back with rope before he would proceed to kill them. Typically inflict a multitude of knife wounds upon the victim, initially inflicting shallow knife wounds to the chest area before inflicting deeper stab and flesh slash wounds, usually 30 to 50 in total, before proceeding to eviscerate the victim. He had, he stated, become adept at avoiding the spurts of blood from his victims as he inflicted the knife wounds and eviscerations upon them, and would regularly sit or squat beside his victims until their hearts stopped beating, adding that the victim's cries, the blood, and the agony gave him relaxation and a certain measure of pleasure. When questioned as to why most of his later victims' eyes had been stabbed or slashed but not enucleated as his earlier victims had been, Andre stated that he initially believed in an old superstition that the image of a murderer is left imprinted upon the eyes of the victim. However, he stated in later years he'd become convinced that this was simply an old wives' tale and had ceased to gouge out the eyes of his victims. Andre also informed Kosteyev he had often tasted the blood of his victims, to which he stated he felt chills and would shake all over. He also confessed to tearing at victims' genitalia, lips, nipples, and tongues with his teeth. In several instances, Andre would cut off or bite off the tongue of his victim as he performed his eviscerations, then, either at or shortly after the point of death, run around the body as he held the tongue aloft in one hand as though celebrating. Although he also admitted that he had chewed upon the excised uterus of his female victims and the testicles of his male victims, he stated later that he had discarded these body parts. Nonetheless, Andre did confess to having swallowed the nipples of some of his victims. On the 30th of November, Andre was formally charged with each of the 34 murders he had confessed to, all of which had been committed between June of 1982 and November of 1990. Over the following days, Andre would confess to a further 22 murders, which had not been connected to the case, either because the murders had been committed outside of Rostov, or because the bodies had not been found, or in the case of one Yelena Zakatnova, because an innocent man had been convicted and executed for the murder, as had been the case with the victims compiled upon the list of initial charges. Andre was able to provide details of these additional killings only the perpetrator could have known. These additional victims, 14-year-old Lyubov Volyabulyeva, had lived in southwestern Siberia and had been killed in a sorghum field near Krasnodar airport on July 25th of 1982, and Andre recalled that he had killed her in a melee field and that he had approached the girl as she sat in the waiting rooms at Krasnodar Airport. Andre stated that she had informed him she lived in the Siberian city of Novokuznetsk and was awaiting a connecting flight at the airport to visit relatives. In December of 1990, Andre led police to the body of Alexei Kobatov, a boy he had confessed to killing in August of 1989 and whom he had buried in a woodland near Shakti Cemetery, proving unequivocally that he was the killer. He later led investigators to the bodies of two other victims he had confessed to killing. Three of the 56 victims Andre confessed to killing could not be found or identified, but Andre was charged with killing 53 women and children between 1978 and 1990 and was held in the same cell in Rostov-on-Don where he had been detained on the 20th of November to await trial. He would later be psychiatrically evaluated on the 20th of August in 1991 after police had completed their interrogation, at which point they included, also, in addition to their interrogation, including reenactments of all murders at each crime scene. Andre was transferred to the Serbsky Institute in Moscow to undergo a 60-day evaluation to determine whether he was mentally competent to stand trial. Andre was analyzed by a senior psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Andre Tkachenko. Tkachenko did note that Andre suffered from various psychological problems, which he attributed to prenatal brain damage, but it concluded that on the 18th of October that although suffering from a borderline personality disorder with sadistic features, he was fit to stand trial. And in 1991, details of Andre, in December of that year, 1991, details of his arrest and a brief summary of his crimes were released to the newly liberated Russian media by police. He was brought to trial on the 14th of April in 1992 and charged with 53 counts of murder in addition to five charges of sexual assault against minors committed when he had been a teacher. He was tried in courtroom number 5 of the Rostov Provincial Court before Judge Leonid Akhobzhanov. It was the first major event of a liberalized post-Soviet Russia as far as media goes, and shortly after his evaluation, investigators had conducted a press conference in which a full list of his crimes was released to the press. The first 2 days of the trial were devoted to the judge reading the long list of indictments against Andre. Each murder was discussed individually, and on several occasions, relatives present in the courtroom broke down in tears or fainted when the details of their relatives were revealed to them. When they broke down the murders of their relatives. After reading the indictments, the judge announced to journalists present in the courtroom his intention to conduct an open trial, stating, "Let this trial at least teach us something so that this will never happen anytime or anywhere again." Judge Akhobzhanov then asked Andre to stand and identify himself and provide his date and location of birth. He complied, though this would prove to be one of the few civil exchanges between the judge and Andre throughout the trial. He was initially questioned in detail about each charge upon the indictment, responding to specific questions regarding the murders, often gave dismissive replies to questions, particularly when questioned as to the specific nature of the wounds he had inflicted upon his victims and the ruses he had used to entice his victims to the locations where he had killed them. He would become indignant only when accused of stealing personal possessions from the victims or to his retaining organs excised from the victims missing from the crime scenes, and on one occasion when asked as to his seeming indifference as to the lifestyle and gender of those whom he had killed, Andre replied, "I did not need to look for them. Every step I took, they were there." In what became a regular, though not continuous, occurrence throughout the trial, the judge berated Andre as he questioned him in detail as to the charges, ordering him to shut your mouth before adding, "You're not crazy," as Andre's responses to questions deviated into his discussing issues such as the repression his family had endured throughout his childhood and is claiming that the charges filed against him are false. The verbal exchanges between Andre and the judge would occur when, whether Andre was cooperative or uncooperative throughout the proceedings, and the manner in which the judge questioned him repeatedly led to Andre's defense lawyer, Marat Kabibulian, to protest and denounce the court as a farce and launch into rambling, disjointed speeches. On occasion, Andre would also expose himself to the court or sing socialist movement anthems throughout the proceedings. These antics regularly resulted in his being returned to his cell as court proceedings would continue in his absence. Finally, after a lengthy process of drama, attempts at withdrawing his confessions, the presenting of numerous witnesses who were presented on his behalf to state his incompetence and his inability to be held accountable for his actions, the court would break following an incident as the brother of Lyudmila Alexeyeva, a 17-year-old girl killed by Andre in August of 1984, the brother of this young woman, threw a heavy chunk of metal at Andre, hitting him in the chest, and when security tried to arrest them, the other victim's relatives shielded him. Following this incident, the court reconvened on the 14th of October to hear formal sentencing, which would not finish until the following day. The judge began sentencing by announcing Andre to be guilty of 52 of the 53 murders for which he had been tried. Let's just give him 53 people, but they said 52 was enough. He was sentenced to death for each offense, which, you know, if you could kill the guy 53 times, that'd be pretty impressive. But nonetheless, he was sentenced to death for all of these offenses and was also found guilty of 5 counts of sexual assault committed during the years which he worked during as a teacher during the 70s. In reciting his findings, the judge read the list of murders again before criticizing both the police and the prosecutor's department for various mistakes in the investigation, which allowed Andre to remain free until 1990. Particular criticism was directed towards not local police, but the prosecutor's department, primarily Procurator Isa Kosteyev. The judge scathed as negligent and who had been dismissive of his inclusion upon a 1987 suspect list compiled by the police. The judge also rejected the numerous claims by Kosteyev that he had made to the media in the months prior to the trial that police had deliberately withheld documents pertaining to him from the prosecutor's department as being provably baseless, and adding that the proof existed he had been in possession of all internal bulletins. So, on the 15th of October, the judge formally sentenced Andre to death plus 86 years for the 52 murders and 5 counts of a sexual assault for which he had been found guilty. Andre kicked his bench across his cage when he heard the verdict and began shouting abuse. However, when given the opportunity to make a speech in response to the verdict, he again remained silent. Upon passing the final judgment, the judge made the following speech: "Taking into consideration the horrible misdeeds of which he is guilty, this court has no alternative. Pose the only sentence that he deserves. I therefore sentence him to death." Andre was taken from the courtroom to his cell at Nochoresk prison to await execution. He lodged an appeal against his conviction with the Russian Supreme Court, but this appeal was rejected in the summer of 1993. And following the rejection of his appeal to the Russian Supreme Court, Andre filed a final appeal for clemency with President Boris Yeltsin. The final appeal was rejected on the 4th of January in 1994. And on February 14th, 1994, Andre would be taken from his cell and death row to a soundproof room in the prison and executed with a single gunshot behind the right ear. The thus bringing an end to a legacy of violence and psychopathy that has really, really had no equal, thankfully, in modern history, but truly bringing to a close a lifetime of just absolute abhorrent violence against innocent people. But that's all I've got for you guys today on the Red River. If you're interested in looking more into this, there are some things that you can take a look at. First off, let's take a look at some of these source materials. And guys, I do apologize if I got choked up or anything during this time. It has been a long, long week already for me. But let's get to this. First thing that you might want to take a look at is Peter Conradi's The Red Ripper. This was a inside look at the mind of Russia's most brutal serial killer. It's a great look at this twisted individual. You'll also want to take a look. Also, no doubt, want to take a look at the killer department. You'll want to take a look at the killer department by Robert Cullen, which is another great look at the investigation and manhunt of Andre and the trials and tribulations of investigators and how they put together and compiled their evidence. It's a pretty in-depth look. You can also take a look. Oopsie, there it is. A few films dedicated to this individual, but I'd also recommend that you take a look at Robert Kallman's Born to Kill in the USSR, True Stories of Soviet Serial Killers, The Encyclopedia of Serial Killers by Wilfred Gregg and Brian Lane, Comrade Chikatilo, The Psychopathology of Russia's Notorious Serial Killer by Olgert Olgin, that's Mikhail Olgin, Olgert Krivich, and Hunting the Devil, The Pursuit, Capture and Confession of the Most Savage Serial Killer in History by Richard Lorre, Brian Mariner, Cannibalism, The Last Taboo, and The Mind of a Murderer, Privileged Access to the Demons that Drive Extreme Violence by Catherine Bramslin. All good takes on this topic. As for films, if you're interested in taking a look at the films regarding this individual, there are a few things dedicated to him. More or less, they're just documentaries. There's The Butcher of Rostov, which was a 45-minute biography channel documentary focusing upon the murders committed by him. And Viktor Burakov is one of the individuals interviewed for the documentary. You can take a look at the at Criminal Russia, The Trail of Satan, a documentary focusing on his case that was broadcast on television in Russia, and The Inside Story, The Russian Cracker, a BBC documentary focusing on the disproportionate number of serial killers in Rostov-on-Don in the years leading to and immediately following the collapse of the Soviet Union. As well, the case of Andrei Chikatilo is one of several included within the documentary. So this is quite a bit of information for you guys to take a look at, but I do hope you enjoyed the show. Enjoy is sort of a weird word for what we went through today, but I do hope you guys found some value in it and enjoyed learning a little bit about this. That's all I've got for you guys today. Hope you're enjoying the rest of your holidays. I'll see you guys on Friday with the next edition of the show. Should be a good time. We're going to be talking about another twisted individual from history. It's going to be good. It's going to be grand. And of course, you'll see me Sunday with another wondrous show. But we're going to be talking about Pedro Rodriguez Filho, another pretty vicious guy. He's known specifically as the Brazilian Maniac and was said to have murdered approximately 71 people. He's got quite the body count on his hands, rivaling that of Andre Chikatilo, the Butcher of Russia. So I hope you guys will tune in Friday at 5 p.m. for that. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your holiday and be safe out there, guys. Enjoy your family time, and we will see you on Friday.